Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labor MPs.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Michael Wood, Labor Party MP for Mount Roskill here, and great to be back on Red Alert Radio after a bit of a break. And, keen to talk to everyone this afternoon with my guest, who is Pippa Coombe, the chair of the Waitemata Local Board. How are you today, Pippa?
Kia ora.
Yeah, very good to have you here. And look, we'll look forward to talking with Pippa just a little bit later on. We're going to talk about some of the work she's doing as chairperson of the Waitemata Local Board, which is the local board for the very central part of Auckland. International Plastic Bag Free Day, which is an issue that Pippa has been involved in. And also with the opening of the Waterview Tunnel, a bit of a discussion about transport in Auckland, and particularly the question as to whether we're getting the balance right between different modes of transport, new motorways, public transport, cycling infrastructure. We'll be talking to Pippa about whether she thinks we've got that one right. The issue I wanted to just have a bit of a discussion about before speaking with Pippa is the question of homelessness in our city. And the reason I raise this is that after I'm having this conversation with Pippa, but before it's being broadcast, I'm going to be participating in something called the LifeWise Big Sleepout. And the Big Sleepout is an annual event that takes place in the Auckland CBD, where a range of people from public life, about 100 people, politicians from central government and local government, CEOs, people around the universities, come and experience for one night what it is like to sleep rough, to not have shelter, to sleep on the hard concrete at night and be exposed to the elements. Happens once a year. I've done it for about the last 3 years, and I'm doing it again this coming Thursday night. LifeWise are the organisation that used to be known as the Methodist Mission, and for generations they've been a group in the Auckland CBD that have looked after people who are in real need, that have given people food and shelter when they otherwise don't have access to those things. And a big part of their mission is trying to end homelessness in Auckland. And if you're anything like me, in recent years you will have noticed an increasing number of people who are sleeping rough on our streets, not just the occasional person in the Auckland CBD, but big numbers, and also spreading outside of the CBD into Auckland suburbs. So in Mount Roskill, where I live, there are people living and sleeping around the local shopping centres, the library, and our local parks. It just didn't used to be that way. And it's not really the kind of New Zealand that I think any of us want to live in. For me, it's a basic tenet of a decent and civilised society that everyone has shelter. It's just one of the most basic human needs that we have. And so the work that LifeWise do is just so important. It's about saying we're just not going to put up with it. We're not going to dance around the edges. We're not just sort of going to try and temporarily cover the problem. We're going to try and end homelessness in Auckland by ensuring that everyone, no matter what their situation, has somewhere safe and warm and dry to sleep at night. And so the LifeWise Big Sleep Out does two things, really. The first thing is that it builds empathy. It gets people in public life having to experience a night of homelessness. So we can no longer just sort of ignore it or say, oh, it's just those people, and not worry about them. We've had a night of, just one night, of knowing what it's actually like to not have that security. The second thing that it does is to raise money to support the work that LifeWise does to end homelessness. And so if you are listening to this and you think, well, what is something practical that I can do to help, then please do log on to the LifeWise Big Sleep Out website. It's easy to find. You can find a list of all of the people who are doing the Big Sleep Out, myself included. And if you're willing to give a donation, you can do that through the website, and every single dollar of that donation goes straight to LifeWise and their mission of ending homelessness in Auckland. And wouldn't that be a wonderful thing if collectively across our community we could achieve that? So I encourage people to think about that, donating to the LifeWise Big Sleep Out and doing something tangible to end homelessness in our city. So, look, folks, moving on from that, welcome to the show, Pippa Coombe. Very nice to have you here, Chair of the Waitemata Local Board. Has it been a busy time for you?
Yes, there's always something going on. Representing the central part of Auckland means, it's always busy, and lots going on, lots of events as well. And just the cycle of council, there always seems to be sort of a new consultation underway and a new sort of process that we have to be part of.
Now, in terms of that cycle of planning and consultation that you do with the community, I think I'm right in that you might have just finished consulting with your community on your local board plan. Can you talk to people a little bit about what's involved and what the local board plan is all about, and what some of the things are that you've been hearing from your community in Waitemata about what they want to see happen in their area?
Yes, so all 21 local boards across Auckland consult on their three-year plans, and these are the local board plans that set the priorities for the next year, next 3 years, and it's how we decide which projects and initiatives that we fund. So they are quite important documents, and we take it very seriously, like what we actually finalise in our plan, that's what we aim to deliver on. And we had a six-week consultation period, and we had from a whole range of people, I guess sort of top of mind, some of the issues are definitely around transport. How can we provide good transport options? Community facilities, making sure people have access to accessible community facilities, that our libraries are delivering really good services. I think there's concerns too around our environment and people wanting us to get involved in, say, restoration projects of our streams. So yeah, lots of good feedback that we've received that we're going to be going through over the next couple of months and then finalising our plan in October.
Okay, and in terms of what the local board actually, in terms of its place in the broader infrastructure of planning for what we do in the city, how does it actually work, and what does it result in once you've completed that local board plan process?
Yeah, so the local boards do have quite a modest budget in terms of the planning for Auckland overall. So we can't do things like the really big infrastructure projects like building an alternative harbour crossing. But what we can do is a lot of the local initiatives, the placemaking, improving our town centres, helping the local economy. And we can do a lot of the projects that happen and that make a difference locally. For example, it can be even simple things like upgrading playgrounds and providing new pathways, new artworks. We contribute to events. So I think there's lots of day-to-day things that local boards do that really do have an impact on Aucklanders every day.
Mm. Look, just while we're on that and talking about the importance of those sorts of local projects, and I guess by extension, the fact that we would want local communities to have a voice in that. There has been some discussion over the last 6 months or so about the structure of Auckland Council and about considering whether it may need to change. Well, I think we're about 7 years into the new structure. It was set up in 2010. And I do know that Auckland Council did do some work looking at, for example, the number of local boards, how they work, how they relate to the broader council organisation. Have you got any views as to whether we've got the structure about right in terms of giving local people and local communities a voice? Or do you think there are some changes that perhaps we should be looking at in that Auckland Council structure to be as effective and as accountable and as open as possible?
Yeah, well, I do think it's really important to have local decision-making done locally, and local boards have been able to achieve that to a certain extent, but there is a governance framework review underway to looking at how it can be more effective, and some of the big issues are around how local boards are funded and what are the decisions that come down to a local level. Those recommendations we're not going to hear for a couple of weeks, I don't think. But they are likely to be things around, should we amalgamate some of the boards to make them a more effective size? And also, how do we fund the boards? So there will be ideas around perhaps there needs to be more local targeted rates. I guess I'm sort of keen to hear what that review, some of the ideas that come out of that review, because I do think that the super city model isn't perfect, and there definitely can be improvements that can be made.
Absolute, always improvements. I guess one of the things I'm interested in, and this came up in a parliamentary debate last week actually, is just that balance between big and efficient versus, you know, small and smaller and local. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think, for example, about the local boards, about how many people are in your local board area?
So Waitematā is a bit of an outline that we've had the greatest growth. I mean, there's been growth all over Auckland, but for example, our city centre has grown hugely in the last few years, and we now have 45,000 residents just in the city centre, and our population's gone from 70,000 in 2010, and it's now estimated to be over 100,000. So we're grappling with a whole lot of new issues around growth. And I guess one of the big issues for our local community that doesn't work, and where I think a lot of people are dissatisfied, is, say, around transport decisions and the disconnect with where you've got a council-controlled organisation, or so-called council-controlled organisation, where a lot of the decision-making around transport is being made by Auckland Transport, that's quite sort of unconnected to the local board.
And look, at that kind of size, I mean, that's, you know, 100,000 people. That's bigger than a parliamentary constituency, about the same size as, you know, say, a city the size of Dunedin. You'd have to say that if you started merging boards and making them bigger than that, it would surely be difficult to retain the really local connections that that you can develop now.
Yeah, that's true. And I think the recommendations are likely to be that Waitematā stays sort of the size that it is, and it would be in other board areas where there might be recommendations around amalgamating. I mean, to me, I don't think it's so much the issue of the size of the board. I just think it's the what's actually going to be delegated down, and that's where, say, the transport structure doesn't work very effectively for local decision-making.
Well, look, Pip, I'd like to turn now to the topic of plastic bags. And there's been a bit of this in the news lately with various proposals for how we can deal with the issue of the proliferation of plastic bags in our society. And today, the day in which we're doing this interview, is, I understand it, International Plastic Bag Free Day. I think most good causes now do have an international day dedicated to them, so it's good that the plastic bags have got that as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the day itself, and also about this issue, what we're actually dealing with, and what the scale of the problem is?
So the Plastic Free Day is part of Plastic Free July, which is plastic overall. Today the focus is really on single-use plastic bags that, as we know, are creating huge problems with the environment. I think it's 1.6 billion plastic bags are used by Kiwis every year, and most of those are ending up in landfill and take probably a couple of thousand years to break down. And they're used for an average of 12 minutes each. So we really don't need all these single-use plastic bags. And I'm a big fan of the Mayor's proposal. It was one of his election pledges that he supports a levy on single-use plastic bags because it's been so effective overseas. So in the UK, I think there was a charge put on of about 5p, and it dropped the rate of use of single-use plastic bags by 80%.
Okay. Backtrack a little bit on to the problem there, and then keen to talk about the solutions. Yeah. So I think you said 1.3 billion a year just in New Zealand, which seems an extraordinary number, really, and only used about 12 minutes, which I assume is effectively the time from which, you know, you get your groceries and drive them home and unload the groceries, which does seem incredibly wasteful. One of the things I've always been really confused about, and you can apply this more generally, is what you can recycle and what you can't recycle. And my understanding is you can't pop these in the ordinary recycling bin at home that you then put out on the curb. But there have been some of these soft plastic recycling stations pop up at some local shops. Do they cater for these kinds of single-use plastic bags?
Yeah, so this is a Nick Smith initiative.
That's a good start.
The government put $1.5 million into soft plastics recycling. So there are places at supermarkets where you can take your soft plastic. There are a lot of issues with that scheme because it's not really dealing with the problem. You have to be super motivated to separate out your soft plastics and take them to the supermarket. And so the people doing it are probably the ones who are already super conscious of the amount of waste and probably already not consuming a lot of plastic. And it's kind of taking letting manufacturers off the hook. So this was a lot of lobbying from the packaging industry to come up with a scheme to look like, you know, the government's doing something, but actually it really is not addressing the problem. And, you know, another side of this scheme is that all of that material is then shipped overseas and it still has to be reused. I mean, it can only be reused a certain number of times. So it's just not addressing the problem.
That little sort of stepped phrase that we use in terms of sustainability is reduce, reuse, recycle, and it kind of seems like they've jumped straight to the last one without thinking about the first two.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, yes, it was a step kind of in the right direction, but it's really not dealing with the sort of the avalanche of plastic and the amount of plastic that's ending up in the ocean and creating all the problems.
So can we perhaps talk about that a little bit more? What actually, you know, we've got this big headline number, 1.3 billion plastic bags in New Zealand. What kind of problems does that actually cause?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's some horrifying information coming about what's going on with marine life and the amount of plastic. I think it's estimated there's going to be, very shortly, there's going to be more plastic in the ocean than marine life. We've all seen images of whales getting cut open and seeing that they're just ingesting plastic bags and how it's affecting a whole lot of marine life getting caught up in plastic. I think New Zealanders really understand how important the environment is and how we have to take care of the oceans, and putting all that plastic in the ocean just can't be a good thing.
Absolutely. And so presumably in terms of tackling the problem, as there always are, there are different ways you can look at it. We've talked about the fact there's a recycling option, which perhaps isn't a particularly effective way of actually making a real dent. Presumably that they could just be banned as well. Are there any examples of that overseas?
I think some countries have done a ban where it's become really, really a terrible problem. Like, is it in Bangladesh where they've banned single-use plastic bags because it was just causing so much problem with flooding and locking up their creaking infrastructure. I guess I'm more in favour of incentivising people through charging, because that's seen as being very effective, because as soon as you charge for plastic bags, it makes people think, well, can they actually take their own bag? Mm. And do they need that one plastic bag to carry one bottle of milk in, for the dairy?
So can you tell us a little bit, you mentioned earlier that this is something which is in place in overseas jurisdictions. Can you tell us a little bit about how it's worked in some of those places and any evidence we have that it really can make a difference?
Yeah, so sorry, just as mentioned, like, I was launching into just the levy scheme where you have a charge on plastic bags. It does lead to a massive reduction in the use of single-use plastic bags. And I think the example is, say, from the UK, where it led to a 80% drop in plastic bags. So that's quite phenomenal. And when you think, I think it's like 4 trillion plastic bags are being used around the world every year, then, yeah, an 80% reduction could have a massive impact.
Absolutely. And so what sort of charges are we looking at? You mentioned that Phil Goff has put a proposal forward in this area. What kind of levy do we need to put on to have that effect of disincentivising the use of single-use plastic bags?
So this was a campaign promise of the mayor, that if he was elected he would pursue a levy. The issue for councils is that councils don't actually have the power for a bylaw for a levy, so a lot of the mayors have got together to lobby government to either introduce the levy directly as a government proposal or to let councils have that power. I'm not sure what it would have to be set at, but I imagine something like 10 cents would be about the right level that would make people change their habits. And that's certainly where stores have got a voluntary scheme like Countdown on Waiheke and Farrow Fresh. They charge, I think, 10 cents for their bags, and that's definitely led to behaviour change.
Yep. And I assume that you're a person who finds other ways of carrying your stuff around, doesn't use single-use plastic bags. Do you ever find there are any issues with that? What do you use? You have bags you take yourself, or you shop at places that perhaps have paper bags? What's Pippa's story in respect of this issue?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's got to figure out what works for them, and I can appreciate, you know, if you're probably shopping for a big family, you might have different needs. I mean, for me, I'm doing a lot of shopping by bike, so I've always got a pannier bag that I can put groceries in. I also have a small bag that folds up that I always carry around with me, so that if I have just a spontaneous purchase, I can always just whip out my bag, or I just decline. So at a lot of shops, especially like when I'm buying small items, I'm always asked if I want a bag, and I just say no, I can put it in my pocket. Or, you know, often you just find you just don't need a bag. I guess the other side of it is people feel like, well, how do you cope without these plastic bags? For, say, a lot of people use them for bin liners or for picking up dog poo. So, I mean, there are other options that people can, you know, can use. And I guess for us at home, we try and, like, whenever we're cooking, if there's a bag for something that we've bought, you know, like if you might find you buy a chicken, it comes in a bag, well, then you can just use that bag to put rubbish in. Or especially if you separate out your compost, you find that you don't need a plastic bag in your bin liner, as a bin liner.
Yeah, it's often the case with these things, isn't it, that it seems like a big change at the time, but actually people pretty quickly and steadily adapt to these sorts of things. I remember, you know, when it first came in that we were to, you know, separate out our refuse and our recycling, I think a lot of people thought, wow, that's going to be a big deal, but you just get used to it, don't you?
Absolutely. And I mean, it's like, you know, for most of us, our grandparents wouldn't have had plastic bin liners, and they found ways to be able to dispose of their rubbish. And so, you know, and there's heaps of tips. Like, if people are interested, you know, online, there's lots and lots of Facebook groups and Zero Waste Facebook group where lots of ideas are shared around how to replace plastic bin liners, say, with, like, folded newspaper, doing origami bin liners. Just lots of different... There's lots of tips out there for what people can use to give up on plastic bag. And the same with dog owners. They all share tips on what you can do so you don't actually have to put their dog waste into a plastic bag and then into landfill.
Yeah, and of course you're quite right. A lot of these things that we think, how can human civilization carry on if we change this? In actual fact, we've only been doing them for, I don't know, 20 or 30 years. And I very clearly remember as a younger child that supermarkets still use paper bags primarily, and it was at some stage in my childhood that it shifted to plastic bags, and plainly, you know, life went on before that point. Just finally on this topic, Pippa, you mentioned that Nick Smith, without doubt one of the most incompetent government ministers in a heavily contested field, responded to this issue with the soft plastics recycling scheme. Is there any sign that the government is willing to listen to this issue and to look at doing something?
Well, I heard Denise Roach spoke yesterday at there was a plastic free July event in Greyland yesterday that the mayor came along to, and Denise spoke there, and her feeling was that the government probably will do something just to look like they are doing something, because it's just getting to the point where everyone can see how ridiculous it is that we're destroying the environment, and that there are some really simple solutions. You know, I think we probably will see councils being given the ability to put in place a bylaw so they can implement a levy. Some of the bigger solutions I just only think are going to come about by change of government, things like container deposit scheme, increasing levies on landfill, all the structural things that need to change to really have an impact on plastic waste.
Absolutely.
It's really only going to come about through a whole different approach to dealing with environmental matters, and I just don't see that coming from the present government.
It seems unlikely, and he's hoping in a few months' time we can turn that around. Look, Pippa, in our final 5 minutes or so, I just wanted to turn to a topic that I know is one of your real passions, and that's providing really good transport options in our city. And what brings that to mind as we sit here in the Planet FM studio is the recent opening of the Waterview Tunnel, which is very nearby to here. It may be pretty close to running underneath us, actually. Obviously, there's a lot of fanfare about that at the time. Lots of government ministers and officials sort of being photographed next to the project, and in many ways it is very impressive. What's your take on that project, and how you think we're going in terms of meeting Auckland's real transport needs?
Yeah, I mean, I can see why people are really excited about the opening of the tunnel, and I'm going to be impressed if this is really completing the motorway network, which it should be, and if it works as a bypass, that is great. The major concern with the tunnel is that it doesn't actually provide transport choice, so as part of that project, there absolutely should have been a busway on the northwestern motorway, and that was some short-sighted decision-making. That meant that it didn't happen, and it's going to have to be retrofitted. And then you've also got, you know, the government pushing the east-west link, which is going to be even more expensive than the $1.4 billion Waterview Tunnel, onto the network. And that project just doesn't have the benefits. Just definitely not going to ease congestion as promised. So
yeah,
I think, yeah.
Yeah, well, let's just rest on that point briefly, because I have to sit in Parliament several days a week, and it's just sort of a crack record at the moment that what we from the government that we're building these big roading projects. That's what Auckland needs to fix congestion, and there's a certain logic that you can sort of follow through that. Our roads are congested; they're very full. Therefore, if we build more big roads, that's going to dissipate the traffic, and it's going to make things flow more easily. What's your response to that line of logic?
No, well, we know that Auckland's growing, and that, you know, we're getting 800 new cars onto the road every week, and that we can't just keep sort of building our way out of the congestion. And the only way that we're going to help Auckland's transport, or help Aucklanders get moving, get to the airport with definite timeframes, is if we have choice. And so that has to be around investment in public transport and active transport. So it's crazy at the moment that there aren't, say, dedicated bus lanes or a rail link to the airport. So you know that you can get, you know, you have some certainty around your trip time. And that's where Auckland's got a lot of catching up to do, is that investment in the options for Aucklanders to have choice. And that's what it really comes down to. And great, if people want to stay in their cars, that's brilliant. You know, that's fine. But they're going to benefit when there are other people who want to choose not to drive can actually make trips on public transport, or by bike, or by ferry.
Absolutely. And so, obviously, we are in the midst of the CRL being built at the moment. What's your number one transport priority following on from that project?
Well, I think, yeah, it's tricky to narrow it down to the number one priority, but I definitely think rail to the airport, and we've got a big incentive now to get that underway with if we're going to be hosting the America's Cup in 4 years' time. I would hope that we could actually see some smart investment in infrastructure around the public transport projects that we need. It's also, if you know, I think for me it's ensuring that any new infrastructure projects are going to be focused on public transport first, and that's where we've got to put that's where the priority's got to be for funding.
Absolutely. And look, just a final note on this in our last little period. The cycling infrastructure. There are some new links opening up with the Waterview project. Can you just very quickly tell people about those before we close off?
Yeah, so the Waterview Tunnel project did deliver a whole lot of cycleway routes. Unfortunately, they haven't quite opened yet, but what we are seeing is the completion of we're aiming towards a connected network of cycling infrastructure, and that's really causing a big lift in cycle numbers. I think it's 46% increase just in the last year, and that's when people feel they can ride on safe infrastructure. They're giving it a go, getting out on their bike.
That's great. Hey, well, thanks, Pippa Coombe. Really appreciate your time here. It's been a pleasure having you on Red Alert Radio. Thanks, folks.
Not at all.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.